Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, October 7th. Voters to decide $140 million school bond. Greenwood ISD sees major increase in attendance in less than a decade. The story was written by Stuart Doreen. Ariel Ellett has seen plenty of change during his time as superintendent at Greenwood ISD. In 2012, 1 year prior to his becoming superintendent, Greenwood ISD student population was 1,757. Elliott reported a student attendance this week of 3,065. That is a 74% increase in less than a decade. Elliott reported the Greenwood boom hasn't stopped during the pandemic. He said the student population is 7.5% higher than last year, 2,850. Demographers expect an increase of 1,500 more students inside Greenwood ISD by 2029. Quote, "We are planning for growth that is continuous," Elliott said. This November, eligible voters in Greenwood will vote on a $140 million school district bond that is expected to help with current and future growth. The bond includes a new intermediate school for 3rd through 5th graders, $62 million, increased capacity, modernized laboratories, and new gym for the high school, $45 million, increased capacity and renovate elementary school for pre-K through 2nd grade, $16 million, increased capacity for administration, $5 million, convert existing bus barn to career and technology labs, $3 million. New bus transportation and maintenance facilities, $5 million. Middle school improvements and alternations, $1.4 million. The bond is expected to have an annual tax impact of $391.50 for a home or property valued at $200,000. According to state law, the dollar amount of school taxes imposed on the resident's homestead of a person 65 years or older cannot be increased above the amount paid in the first year after the person turned 65. In 2013, nearly 66% of Greenwood voters approved a bond that led to projects, including the building of a new middle school. Elliott says, "It is impossible to know how referendums will play out, especially during a pandemic, but the, quote, need outweighs the risk," end quote. He added, the Greenwood community has supported its school district, and officials have looked at other growing areas inside the region to get ideas about the future. He pointed to Lubbock, especially Lubbock-Cooper ISD, as a place where officials have taken ideas that they would like to implement here. Quote, "It is important that the classrooms work for the teachers, not me," Elliott said. He added that finding employees will be a huge piece of the puzzle with the expected growth. Greenwood ISD has grown from needing 200 teachers to around 400 during his time at the district. He expects the Greenwood ISD will be able to do that and give the kids everything they need to be successful in life. He pointed to the transformation of the bus barn into a career and technology lab as an example of that. Lastly, he said it is tough to know if the county assistance tax being proposed by Midland County, and which also will be on the November ballot, will have an impact. He expects residents will let Greenwood ISD's issue stand on its own and is what the people want. Officials suggest sentence for rioter. prosecuting team makes Rosa offer for January 6th participation. The story was written by Caitlin Randall. The U.S. Attorney's Office has recommended 1 month of home confinement for Midlander Elio Rosa, who pleaded guilty in July for his participation in riots at the U.S. Capitol building on January 6th. Rosa agreed to plead guilty on July 29th to a misdemeanor charge of parading, demonstrating, or picketing in a Capitol building in exchange for the government dropping the other charges against him. He was originally indicted on 4 misdemeanor charges and a felony obstruction charge, punishable by up to 20 years in prison. In addition to a month of home confinement, prosecutors are recommending 3 years of probation, 60 days of community service, and a $500 fine, according to court documents filed on Monday. The recommendation is based in part on Rosa's cooperation with the Justice Department's investigation, the court documents state. 3 days after the Capitol riots, Rosa voluntarily contacted the FBI and admitted to entering the Capitol building. The attorney's office filing indicates that on January 9th, Rosa went into a local FBI office to turn himself in before an arrest warrant had been issued. He agreed to a voluntary interview and, quote, expressed remorse for his conduct, end quote. Rosa had traveled to Washington, D.C. with fellow Midlander Jenny Cudd, who was also charged for participating in the riots. He told investigators the two became friends after meeting at an event in November 2020, and they shared similar beliefs. Rosa spent about 20 minutes walking around the Capitol building before he was escorted out with a crowd of other rioters by Capitol Police, according to the court documents. Surveillance footage shows he did not join in any violence or vandalism. The defense also filed documents on October 4th to ask the court to sentence Rosa only to probation and a fine. Rosa's lawyer cited his early cooperation and lack of a criminal record as reasons against confinement. In a letter submitted to prosecutors, Rosa wrote that he felt profound shame for his actions on January 6th and, quote, I only have good intentions toward this nation in my heart and future plans, end quote. Quote, after 3 months I had, this past week, the courage to watch the videos of that day, the voices of desperation coming from the Capitol police officers will forever be engraved in my memory, he wrote. I look forward to the day when I will be able to go to D.C. again and personally ask for their forgiveness for sadly being apportioned with those who brought so much chaos and pain to them, emotionally and physically, end quote. Rosa's sentencing hearing is scheduled for October 12th. City leaders celebrate new animal services facility. New $8.9 million building offers space for veterinary medicine. The City of Midland held a ribbon-cutting ceremony Wednesday for the new $8.9 million animal services facility at 1200 North Fairgrounds Road. A few highlights of the new facility include meet-and-greet rooms to promote hands-on interaction with the animals, 100% outside air exchanges and no cross-contamination of air, indoor-outdoor access for dogs, get-to-know courtyards, natural daylight in every animal room to maintain natural circadian rhythm, and a training room for pet ownership classes and training opportunities. Quote, the new facility will offer a healthier, low-stress environment for the animals and citizens, adoption events, in-house low-cost vaccination clinics, in-house sterilization for adopted animals, and a volunteer program to assist with growing needs, the city wrote in a news release. Animal Services will transition into its new facility next week. From October 11th through 15th, Animal Services will operate by appointment only. To schedule an appointment, residents can call Animal Services at 685-7420. The new facility will resume normal operating hours and open to the public on October 18th. Facts about the new facility. Square footage, 18,400 square feet, more than 11,000 square feet designated for kennel space and a spay-neuter clinic. The new facility also includes quiet and comfortable public zones, transparent animal rooms, cats have separate lounging space from litter box area, medical room, designated drop-off area, sally port for securing unloading of animals, an education room to foster a relationship with customers.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, October 7th, 2021. Community Roundup. Old Sorehead Trade Days. Old Sorehead Trade Days is set to take place this weekend in Stanton. Hours are 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Saturday and noon to 5 p.m. Sunday. There are expected to be 615 booths with everything, including food, antiques, jewelry, collectibles, woodcrafts, and more. Go to stanton.com/events/2018/old-sorehead-trade-days23 for more information. Beatles Tribute. The Classical Mystery Tour will perform with Midland Odessa Symphony Saturday at Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center. The four musicians in Classical Mystery Tour look and sound just like the Beatles, according to a news release from the MOSC. But Classical Mystery Tour is more than just a rock concert. The show presents more than two dozen Beatles tunes performed exactly as they were originally recorded. Tickets are $32 to $52. Students, $8, and are available by calling the Wagner Knoll box office at 800-514-3849 or by visiting mosc.org. For more information, visit classicalmysterytour.com. Events and activities. Vinyl Brunch, Tom Petty, Halloween edition, 10:30 a.m. Sunday at the Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center. Chinati Weekend, October 8th through 10th in Marfa. Boundless, Art and the Expansive Eye, opening reception, 5 to 9 p.m. October 12th, on view until December at Baker Shore Fine Art. Midland County Republican Women, 11:30 a.m. at Midland Country Club. Tickets, $25 to $35. Online, https://mcrw.us/. Midland's Trail of Horrors, opening 7:30 till 11 p.m. October 15th, 3112 South County Road, 1197. Nature Preserve Outdoor Pop-Up with the Little Gym of Midland, 9 a.m. October 16th at the I-20 Wildlife Preserve. Metaphysical Life Fair, October 16th and 17th at Hilton Garden Inn. Oktoberfest 2021, 6 p.m. October 16th at the Hotel Settles in Big Spring. Midland Y Halloween Carnival, 4 p.m. October 23rd at 800 North Big Spring Street. Healthy Kids Running Series, a 5-week in-person fall running series, features once a week racing, 4 p.m. October 24th at Hogan Park, 1201 East Wadley. Registration is now open at healthykidsrunningseries.org. Sixth Annual Power of the Purse, 6 p.m. October 28th at Bush Convention Center. Pooches on the Patio Spooktacular, 5 p.m. October 28th at 615 North Sam Houston in Odessa. Trunk or Treat, 6 p.m. October 29th at Keller Williams Realty, Midland. Harvest Party, 5 p.m. October 30th at Golf Course Road Church of Christ. Halloween Werewolf, 8 p.m. October 30th at the Hive Comics. Trick or Treat, noon October 31st at 3211 West Wadley. Nonprofits. C4K Concert and Dinner, 5:30 p.m. Thursday at La Hacienda Event Center. Centers Operation Elf Toy Drive through November 22nd at Centers, 3701 Andrews Highway. Texas Size Garage Sale, benefiting Meals on Wheels and Homebound Services, October 8th, 9th, 12th, and 14th. On East Scarborough Drive, contact Senior Life Midland at 432-689-6693 for more information. San Miguel Family Festival, October 9th and 10th at 1100 Camp Street. Pink in the Park, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. October 16th at Centennial Park. 2021 Wildcatters, 6:30 p.m. October 16th at Rolling Sevens Ranch Event Center. Wacky Wig Run, 9 a.m. October 30th at Scarborough Sports Complex. Trunk or Treat, 5:30 p.m. October 27th at 1412 West Illinois. Cinderella Auditions, October 31st through November 3rd at Midland Community Theater. Entertainment Calendar. Karen Leon, El Moro, Los Vendavales, Los Tu de la Si y Tomas Bayardo, 8 p.m. Friday at La Hacienda Event Center. The Price is Right Live, 7:30 p.m. Wednesday at Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center. Petty Breakers, Tom Petty Tribute, 6 p.m. October 15th at the Ector Theater. JJ, El Gigante de la Comedia, October 15th, 8 p.m. at La Hacienda Event Center. Felipe Esparza, 9 p.m. October 16th at Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center. 18th Annual Roar with Laughter Hilarity Review Fundraiser, 7:30 p.m. October 16th. The Midland West Rotary Club's Fall Fest Fundraiser, 6 p.m. October 16th at Green Tree Country Club. For more information, please visit http://midlandwestrotary.com. Cinema Under the Stars, Hocus Pocus, 7:30 p.m. October 20th at Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center. Radney Foster, 6:30 p.m. October 21st at Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center. An Evening with David Sedaris, 7 p.m. October 28th at the Ector Theater. 432 Fright Night, 6 p.m. October 30th at the Ector Theater. Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center 10-year anniversary kickoff, 7 p.m. November 1st at Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center. Regular meetings and activities. Healing Yoga for People Recuperating from Cancer, 5:30 p.m. Monday at Yoga Sanctuary, 4202 Dawn Circle. Party on the Patio, 7 to 11 p.m. Fridays at Ranchland Hills Golf Club. Downtown Farmers Markets, 8 a.m. to noon Saturday at the Museum of the Southwest. Palette Club Painting, 9 a.m. to noon Tuesdays, except the second Tuesday of the month, at the Palette Club of Midland.
Hello, this is Cindy reading Health and Wellness from the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Wednesday. MMH to offer tobacco cessation program. Padmaja Patel, Midland Health. In its vision to make Midland the healthiest community in Texas, Midland Health is now offering a novel tobacco cessation program. Midland Health is one of the first health systems to provide the Pivot Tobacco Cessation Program as a free community-wide option. Tobacco use is still the leading preventable cause of death and disease in the United States. Cigarette smoking alone kills more than 480,000 Americans each year, and studies estimate that smoking's economic impact in the U.S. totals more than $300 billion a year. Midland County has a higher rate of smoking, 19.3%, than the average in the state of Texas, 16.5%, and a slightly higher rate of all tobacco use than the state average. That is why it makes perfect sense to address this modifiable risk factor and improve the health of our community. Unfortunately, during the COVID-19 pandemic, cigarette sales picked up after 4 years of annual decline and calls to smoking cessation lines dropped 27% compared to 2019. We now know that those who smoke are at higher risk of severe COVID-19 infection. Among those with COVID-19 infections, researchers found that the risk of disease progression in those who currently smoke or previously smoked was nearly double that of non-smokers. The good news is, it's never too late to improve your lifestyle. Within minutes of smoking your last cigarette, your body starts to heal. Pivot Tobacco Cessation Program Description. The participants will have ready access to Pivot, this game-changing smoking cessation program at no additional cost. This app-based tool gives smokers round-the-clock access to a dedicated, trained tobacco expert, nicotine replacement therapy, a personal breath sensor, and an online community of support. Initial studies found that 42% of program users successfully quit smoking in the initial survey period. After 7 months, 86% of those who had quit remained smoke-free. Almost 80% of Pivot users decreased their daily number of cigarettes. Pivot is a self-paced program that helps people reduce or quit smoking, vaping, and other tobacco products. Pivot's non-judgmental approach has been proven to increase motivation and help people deal with the triggers that lead to smoking. Access Pivot through your smartphone. There are no classes, no phone calls, and no pressure to quit. Best of all, Pivot is available free of charge for a limited number of participants at this time. Pivot includes mobile app, personalized daily recommendations and activities, free nicotine replacement products, proven to help reduce cravings, the Pivot Smart Sensor, increase motivation while tracking progress, coaching support, a dedicated human coach available via in-app text. working with a pivot coach is optional. Online user community, share and learn from others on the same journey. This program has limited spots. Contact the Lifestyle Medicine Center to register, or if you have any questions, call 432-221-5433. Padmaja Patel, MD, is the medical director at the Lifestyle Medicine Center. COVID Patient Numbers Decline by Caitlin Randall. The number of COVID-19 patients at Midland Memorial Hospital fell to 47 on Tuesday morning, compared with 126 COVID-19 patients at MMH a month ago. Coronavirus hospitalizations have been trending downward since the beginning of September, after the Delta variant caused a new wave of infections. However, MMH Chief Operating Officer Stephen Bowerman said the surge is not yet over and noted that there were only 3 COVID-19 patients in the hospital on July 4th. We need to continue in the community to maintain social distancing where we can. Try to avoid crowds and poorly ventilated spaces. Wash your hands frequently if you can, and whether you've been vaccinated or not. If you're indoors having problems social distancing, please wear a mask, he said during a press conference on Tuesday. Although coronavirus cases at MMH are declining, Bowerman said the total hospital census is high for this time of year at 219 patients. COVID-19 cases made up 21% of total hospitalizations on Tuesday, down from about 50% at the end of August. Other things to know from Tuesday's press conference include: there were 24 active and 23 convalescing COVID-19 cases on Tuesday. Convalescing patients are those recovering from serious illness. The age range is from 27 years old to 84. 19 patients were on ventilators. 85% of COVID-19 patients were unvaccinated, which comes to 7 breakthrough cases. There were 36 COVID-19 deaths in the month of September. 23% of COVID-19 cases were from outside Midland County, and only one patient was from outside the Permian Basin. 47% of eligible Midland County residents are fully vaccinated, and 55% have had at least one dose. That's lagging behind Texas as a whole. 62% of eligible Texans are fully vaccinated. The hospital had about 300 doses of Regeneron antibody treatment remaining on Tuesday. Midland Health administered 657 vaccines out of 700 available spots last week. First, second, and booster shots of the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines are available, as well as single doses of the Johnson and Johnson vaccine. Appointments can be made at midlandhealth.org/schedule-my-vaccine. Saving True Pears is back this year with a clay shoot at Jake's Clays. The event is one of the marquee events during Breast Cancer Awareness Month in and around Midland, typically raising well over $100,000 each year for Pink the Basin. Peggy Floyd and Debbie Bergen have been instrumental in the past for turning this clay shoot pink and making Saving True Pears one of the biggest fundraisers of the fall season.
Here are some obituaries that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, October 7th. Lois Wyatt Matichek passed away peacefully at her home in Bedford, Texas, on September 26. She was born on September 25, 1931, in Carbon, Texas, to Layla and Ray Wyatt. Lois graduated from Carbon High School and moved to Midland, Texas, in 1949. She met Jerry Matichek and married in 1950. She was preceded in death by her parents, 2 siblings, and Lois's husband, Jerry Matichek. She is survived by 2 daughters, Sandra Hightower and husband Jack Hightower of Fort Worth, and Brenda Smart and husband Steve Smart of Colleyville. Her 2 sons, Joe Matacek of Midland and Robert Matacek of Dallas. She is also survived by 2 grandchildren, 3 great-grandchildren, and 1 niece. Lois had a successful career in the oil and gas industry for 30 years in Midland. She was an active member of St. Stephen's Catholic Church in Midland prior to moving to Bedford, Texas. A private memorial service will be held at St. Thomas Aquinas Catholic Church in Dallas, Texas. Tommy Wayne Floyd II passed away on October 4th. Tommy was born on January 21, 1947, to Tommy and Ann Floyd in Sweetwater, Texas, where he resided until he joined the United States Army in 1966. After leaving the Army in 1968, Tommy made his home in Midland, Texas. Tommy is survived by 5 children, Anthony Crawford of Midland, Clay Floyd of Dallas, Gwendolyn McKee of Abilene, Tommy Floyd of Roscoe, Crystal Goodman of Navasota, and Tanya of Dallas. He also leaves behind a host of grandchildren, cousins, and loving relatives and friends. Tommy was preceded to death by his parents. A military graveside service will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, October 9th, at Sweetwater Cemetery, with Reverend Robert Carey officiating. Interment will follow under the direction of McCoy Funeral Home. Honors will be performed by the U.S. Army Honor Guard. Online condolences may be expressed at www.mccoyfh.com. Catalina Espinoza Montes, age 80, passed away on October 4th in Lubbock, Texas. Catalina was born on July 27, 1941, in Colorado City, Texas, to Alberto Espinoza and Angelita Arispe. A viewing will be held from 10 a.m. till 9 p.m. Wednesday, October 6th, at Stanton Memorial Funeral Chapel. A rosary will be recited at 7 p.m. Funeral Mass will be held at 10 a.m. Thursday, October 7th, at St. Joseph Catholic Church. Interment will follow at St. Joseph's Cemetery. Catalina is survived by her daughter, Angelita Garza, 2 sisters, 2 brothers, 8 grandchildren, and 18 great-grandchildren. Donald Merritt, age 95 of Midland, passed away October 5th. Celebration of life will be held at 9 a.m. Saturday, October 9th, at the I-20 Wildlife Preserve Pavilion. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Eldian Hose, age 87 of Midland, passed away on Sunday, October 3rd. Viewing will be held from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Friday, October 8th, at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel, 2508 North Big Spring Street. Graveside service will follow at Rest Haven North at 3 p.m. Eldian is survived by 3 daughters, Connie Kevin Chambly, Fancy Aldiana Duran, and Ray Dawn Faulkner, 1 sister, Evelyn Douglas, and multiple nieces, nephews, and cousins, 5 grandchildren, and 1 great-granddaughter. Louis Dwayne Felkins, age 61, of Odessa, passed away on October 1st at Medical Center Hospital in Odessa. Louis was born on April 11, 1960, to Louis and Polly Clark Felkins in Ponce, Puerto Rico. He is survived by 3 daughters, Amber Nicole Gray, Misty Belton, and Patricia Villanueva. His father, Louis Felkins, and 4 siblings. A memorial service will be held on Thursday, October 7th at 11 a.m. at Connection Christian Church with Don Weeks officiating. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory. Maria Luisa Ramos, age 78, passed away on October 5th in Midland. A viewing will be held from 11 a.m. till 8 p.m. on Thursday, October 7th at Stanton Memorial Funeral Chapel. Funeral service will be held at 11 a.m. Friday, October 8th at Hosanna Christian Fellowship Church. Interment will follow at St. Joseph's Cemetery. Maria is survived by her daughters, Maria Ramos, Rosa Subia, Alida Haggerty, Elizabeth Ramos, sons Pablo Ramos Jr., Gabriel Ramos, Ismael Ramos, Eduardo Ramos, two sisters, two brothers, 26 grandchildren, and 34 great-grandchildren. Funeral arrangements are entrusted to Stanton Memorial Funeral Home. Online condolences can be received at www.stantonfh.com. Patricia Glenn, age 72, of Midland, died Tuesday, September 21st, in Plano. Celebration of life will be held at 3 p.m. October 11th at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa.
Hi, I'm Kim. I'm reading the Odessa American. Today is Thursday, October 7th, 2021. TIRZ Board gets downtown master plan glimpse. Turning downtown Odessa into a destination site where people come to shop, dine, and seek entertainment are realistic goals, but parking issues and creating housing downtown are the city's biggest challenges. Those are the preliminary findings of an effort to update the city's downtown master plan. The city's Tax Increment Reinvestment Board on Wednesday had their first glimpse of the findings of Kimley Horn and Associates, the firm hired by the city to update their downtown master plan. The project has been moving really fast, but we like what we're seeing, Kimley Horn planning analyst Monica Powell told the TIRZ board. The groundwork for many of the city's downtown goals are already there, but housing seems to be a major challenge due to infrastructure costs. Powell said the master plan update will be completed and presented to City Council for adoption by the end of October. The consulting firm spent the past 2 months studying the city's existing downtown resources and hosted a series of public town hall meetings to gauge what residents think of and want to see downtown, Powell said. The workshop feedback closely mirrored the findings of a community survey conducted online, she said. A majority of respondents indicated they were satisfied with the overall safety and variety of events held downtown, Powell said. On the other hand, the majority of respondents said they wanted more shopping options, parking, and thought the area could use more sprucing up. Powell said the consulting firm was especially pleased at the diversity of those who participated in the online survey. Of the 191 respondents, 47% were between the ages of 31 and 50, and 36% were 51 to 74. 68% of those who responded on the survey indicated they had been residents for at least 20 years, and 50% said they visit downtown at least once per month. City officials and other community leaders have said they would like to attract a broad range of visitors downtown, especially people in their 20s and 30s. Powell said there was widespread support for increasing the number of activities and events that would attract the targeted age group, along with family-friendly activities. More art and entertainment were among the most often mentioned desires residents wanted to see downtown. City and business leaders have also expressed a desire to see more housing downtown, especially housing that would attract young professionals and college-age students. Odessa College, UTPB, and Medical Center Hospital have all expressed interest in the housing issue, but their own individual efforts have been stymied due to the infrastructure cost and available property and location, TIRZ officials told Powell. TIRZ board members said they will vote in November to form a subcommittee that would start working with different institutions and potential developers to talk about joint efforts to create housing downtown. IB music class looks at song origins. As part of Seth Bedford's International Baccalaureate Music course, students are looking more deeply into well-known songs, researching them, and writing their own tunes. Bedford, the Odessa High School orchestra director, said he thought they could start with songs because it's something they all know, interact with, and relate to. They started talking more about the origins of the songs and why they were important. Among the songs were You Don't Own Me, Un Das Vecum Desolaten Vibe, Ballad of a Soldier's Wife, and It Might As Well Rain Until September. Three of Bedford's students are Zachary Rivera, a 17-year-old senior who plays the guitar, Savannah Munez, a 17-year-old senior who plays flugelhorn, and Imari Johnson, who plays clarinet, but was singing the day the Odessa American visited. Munoz said the flugelhorn is part of the trumpet family. It's just a more mellow version. They use it in jazz, she added. Bedford said the students are super serious about their music, and they are all in band, mariachi, or guitar. The students made presentations on songs that were meaningful to them and did their own research. Munoz chose Everything I Wanted by Billie Eilish. We looked at how it was written, the influences by the person who wrote it, the history, the form of the song, and the rhythmic variations to see if it influenced any particular style of writing, Rivera said. He added that they took into account everything that made the song what it was, and then retroactively broke it down to see the different parts as it came together as a whole. We broke it down, we went line by line and explained what the artist had intended to say, what we thought about it, Munoz said. Then they started working on an original song. They struggled with the topic because they were somewhat overwhelmed. To make it more manageable, they broke it into the lyrics and the music. Once they decided on a topic, they brainstormed ideas to get a feel for what they were trying to do, Rivera said. First, we started trying to write music and put lyrics to music, but we found that it was more difficult, so we went the other way. Wrote almost a pseudo type of poem, and then from that, we decided, okay, well, this is what we have. This is what we want it to sound like. This is the feeling we're going for. So for now, we started putting in some chords or different ideas to firm what we wanted to convey through the music, Rivera added. The song is about Zach's dog, Blue, and the song is called Blue's Clues. When Blue was a puppy, he had blue eyes, now he has brown eyes. It was derived from one time I was cooking outside and he just hopped up and stole a steak and took off with it. That was collectively an idea that we really wanted to keep within the song. So from there, we almost built entirely around that idea. We were determined to put that in there somehow. Imari put together a long list of ways that we could integrate that, and from there, we just made it work, Rivera said. He added that the project has given them insight into the song writing process. It definitely allows you to kind of see some motives that you might not have been able to discern before, whether it be just little things we did with rhyme scheme or rhythms, inflection of the voice. It gives you a new perspective on what a song has the potential to mean, Rivera said. Bedford said they got into You Don't Own Me from an NPR broadcast from a few years ago. It talked about the song's connection to the civil rights movement as the writers were involved with that. Quincy Jones is the first Black executive producer, basically, in the pop music world, and how basically this team of producers and he and these writers came together and they said, you know what? We are really kind of fed up with the vision of love and the relationship between boys and girls that pop music sells kids. That's not for real. And basically they said, what happens if we write a song where the girl is telling off the guy? And so when they played it for Leslie Gore, she knew she immediately connected with it. Bedford said, when she talked about it years later, she said, I never saw it as this feminist anthem. She said, I saw it as a humanist anthem. She said, I saw anyone could sing this to anybody else who they just needed to assert themselves and be this, who I am. She was always very proud of it being a feminist anthem. But when she recorded it as a 17-year-old, that wasn't where her head was. Bedford said the Ivy course is a year long and they will be diving into all forms of music. The melody of the song is very straightforward. When we started, we knew we wanted two things. We wanted a light, lifting song. We wanted a light, uplifting song. We wanted something pretty straightforward, upbeat, Rivera said. They went through rock and jazz ideas, but decided to stick with a format that was simple to understand, playable by everybody, and that allowed them to incorporate all their ideas, he said. Munoz said when they were asked to write a song, it was like a new spectrum of music was introduced to me. The one hard thing that we had to do was collaborate with each other, and never had I ever thought about having to collaborate with somebody when trying to make a song or writing music. I've never had that struggle. I just thought someone wrote it, you played, it was simple as a form. That's all I used to see, Munoz added. Asked whether they found anything surprising about the origins of songs they'd looked at so far, Rivera said he thinks there's something extraordinary in every song. There's always more than meets the eye. But when you really get down to it, whether it's Leslie Gore singing about a perceived feminist anthem that turns out to be more about us as a human race, or if we're looking at songs that are seemingly about the soldier sitting next to his wife and in the underlying tones, we have this feeling of remorse and death and loss. If you look under the cover of every song, you're destined to find something that you didn't expect, he added. As for what's next, Bedford said, they are deciding as they go along. As we are touching our topics and we're getting a lot of theory, we're getting lots of history, really. The material and what we do is more or less up to us. We get some freedom with it. I definitely want them to do some instrumental music. I want them to explore different periods and styles of music. And one of the things I hope by the end of this is that they have a really strong grounding in music theory before they've finished for the year. It's really kind of music theory and history through doing, Bedford said. Controversial pro-ration debate continues. Curbing statewide oil and gas production seriously considered last year. Proration or limiting oil and gas production to help control prices is controversial in the energy industry because many producers cite free market principles in opposing it, but a significant number backed it when the prices tanked in the spring last year. Things got bleak enough that the Permian Basin Petroleum Association put the idea to a vote of its 500 members before the Texas Railroad Commission rejected it on a 2-to-1 vote. The PBPA, Midland oil man Wes Perry, ConocoPhillips spokesman Dennis Nuss, and the American Petroleum Institute in Washington say the notion is on the back burner now that prices have rebounded. But they say the possibility remains that statewide proration will one day be reconsidered as worldwide markets remain vulnerable to the whims of OPEC and OPEC Plus, the ups and downs of supply and demand, and the menace of COVID-19 and its variants. Ask why OPEC and OPEC Plus are periodically called on to reduce their pumping when American producers are unwilling to do so. PBPA Executive Vice President Stephen Robertson said it's a difference in purposes. We're not like Saudi Arabia or Russia, which are all about the dollar, Robertson said. Here it's all about competition. We produce a cleaner barrel of oil, and we want to improve the environmental impact of our product. We have members who were in favor of proration and others who favored market forces determining what happened. Robertson said the PBPA has reported to the Oil and Natural Gas Regulatory Railroad Commission in March 2020 that its divided membership dictated a neutral position. He explained that the RRC has always ordered some limited proration and does now in various fields to prevent waste and adjust the correlative rights and opportunities of royalty owners. Former Railroad Commissioner Ryan Sitton of Friendswood voted for proration last year and was opposed by Commissioner Christy Craddock and Wayne Christian. RRC spokesman Andrew Keith said from Austin that statewide proration hasn't been enacted since 1972. Perry said the practice made some sense back in the day, but it doesn't today. There are other ways to handle a downturn, the managing partner of PBEX Inc. said. We didn't have any debt, so we shut in most of our wells and didn't sell any oil, although you have to be careful doing that because you can ruin a well. Referring to an option called a put, Perry said financial instruments are available that weren't during the days of proration. We ramped up production and became our own worst enemies, but that is the free market way. You hope for the best and plan for the worst. For example, the former Midland mayor said an oil man can buy a put to guarantee a minimum price of $60 a barrel in 6 months. It's like buying life insurance, he said. You hope you don't have to use it. Nuss said from Houston that ConocoPhillips believes in the free market and opposes government intervention. The only exception would be if the free market posed a threat to national security, he said. Asked why ConocoPhillips would sell its oil for less than its production cost, Nuss said, we can't change our stand on that sort of thing based on how things are looking. The price goes up and down. You either support the free market or you don't. API chief economist Dean Foreman said, pro-Russian has historically been used as a mechanism to limit production, and in practice, it has tended to penalize the most productive wells and operators. Limiting competition for drilling, investment, and infrastructure while creating long-term negative consequences for American energy leadership. By contrast, the U.S. has the opposite problem now of domestic crude oil production that has remained down by 1.8 million barrels per day from its high of 13 MBD in November 2019. Foreman said when U.S. petroleum demand returned to its 2019 levels in August, crude oil inventories fell to their lowest for the month since 2018, and we returned to being a petroleum net importer from global markets. Historically, a combination of demand outpacing supply, lower inventories, and higher imports has been a recipe for higher prices, and pro-rationing could have only made things worse. Market forces will ensure that Texas producers provide the affordable, reliable energy that the nation's economic recovery depends on. COVID-19 news, COVID by the numbers. COVID in the basin, Ector County, 24,998 total cases, 490 deaths. ECISD daily cases, 10 students, 2 staff. Midland County, 27,006 total cases, 342 deaths. Texas, 4,093,140 total cases, 66,044 deaths. U.S. cases, 43,878,517 total confirmed and 704,233 deaths. Find out more at covidinthebasin.com or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/ZTRJLF. See the ECISD COVID-19 dashboard at tinyurl.com/Y6NTPTUQ. Vaccination site closed. The city of Odessa issued a press release on Wednesday afternoon that COVID-19 vaccination clinic at UTPB Park is closed. In addition, the city of Odessa's incident command post also closed Wednesday. IC will continue to monitor the region's COVID case numbers. COVID-19 testing is still open at McKinney Park. MCH daily COVID numbers. Medical Center Hospital COVID inpatient numbers as of 9 a.m. Wednesday. 49 total COVID inpatient in-house. Med-surg non-critical, 32 COVID patients, 24 unvaccinated, 4 vaccinated, 4 unknown. Critical care, 17 COVID patients, 15 on ventilator, 12 unvaccinated, 4 vaccinated, 1 unknown. Of the 15 COVID patients on ventilator, 4 are vaccinated, 10 are unvaccinated, 1 unknown. Age ranges of COVID patients, 33 to 93 years old. Patients from outside Ector County include 1 from Crane, 3 from Fort Stockton, 1 from Jal, New Mexico, 3 from Midland, 1 from Pecos. The rest are from Odessa, Ector County. Angel Tree sign-up. Angel Tree registration is open at the Salvation Army. The program helps families in need provide Christmas presents to their children age 12 and younger. Qualified families include low-income families, families currently struggling financially, and those in emergency situations. Sign up through Friday and October 11th through 15th and pre-register at tinyurl.com/Y3A H3OHU with the code Odessa. For more information, call 432-332-0738 or stop by the Salvation Army, 810 East 11th Street. Lecture Series. Midland College has scheduled Davison Distinguished Lecture Series. This week's event will feature astrophysicist and TV personality and keynote speaker Hakeem Alusiai from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. today at G. Langford Chaparral Center. The event is free. Tickets are required. Seating is limited. For tickets or information, call the Midland College Foundation at 432-685-4556 or email foundation@midland.edu. Haunted Car Wash. Crazy Clean Car Wash has scheduled a tunnel of terror haunted car wash from 8 p.m. to 11 p.m. Friday, Saturday, October 15th, 16th, 22nd, 23rd, 29th, 30th, and 31st, and from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. October 23rd at two of its locations. Psycho Clown Circus will take place at 2124 East 8th Street. Zombie Attack will be at 3820 Pembroke Street. Visit tinyurl.com/3NZKBY5E. Meeting. Comanche Trails Woodturners has scheduled a meeting from 10 a.m. to noon Saturday at George Hancock's shop, 1709 Clark Street, Midland. George Hancock will demonstrate making Christmas ornaments on the wood lathe. The public is welcome to all our demonstrations. For more information, call 432-439-5343. Walk to Fight Suicide. The Permian Basin Out of the Darkness Walk has been scheduled from 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. Sunday at Memorial Gardens Park, 4730 East 42nd Street. On-site registration will take place at 2 p.m. or pre-register online. There will also be resource booths, AFSP merchandise, memory wall, honor beads, walk t-shirts, and more. The event provides community connection, healing, and hope for survivors of suicide loss, lived experience. For those that can't make the event, walkers and teams are invited to safely walk in their neighborhoods and parks. Registration is free and open to the public. Sponsorships are available. Donations are also welcome. To pre-register, donate, or for more information, visit tinyurl.com/2xw6h7yh or contact Amanda Province at 432-260-3373 or permianbasinwalk@gmail.com. Mary Marketplace. Tickets are now on sale for the Junior League of Odessa's 38th Annual Mary Marketplace, Merry and Bright, taking place November 4th through 7th at the Ector County Coliseum. The four-day extravaganza will feature holiday shopping from 80 hand-selected vendors from Texas and beyond, plus can't-miss special events including the Premier Shopping Party, Ladies' Champagne Brunch and Breakfast with Santa. All proceeds support the Junior League of Odessa's mission to raise funds and provide volunteers for our local West Texas community. Tickets and sponsor tables are available for purchase. Tickets are non-refundable. For tickets, sponsor table, or more information, visit boxofficesolutions.net or call 800-514-3849. Auditions for It's a Wonderful Life, a live radio show, has been scheduled at 6:30 p.m. October 20th and 21st at the Permian Playhouse, 310 West 42nd Street. Auditions will consist of cold reads from the script. Memorizing the script is not necessary, as the actors will hold their scripts in their hands during performances, just as actors would for radio broadcasts of the time. Performances are scheduled at 7:30 p.m. December 3rd, 4th, 10th, and 11th, and 2:30 p.m. December 5th and 12th. Visit tinyurl.com/3f6vk2zr or basintheaterworks.org. Parade of Lights. Downtown Odessa, Inc. has scheduled Parade of Lights December 4th. Lineup begins at 3 p.m. in the Odessa College parking lot beside the Sports Center off University. The parade begins at 6:30 p.m. All entries must be in the parade lineup by 6 p.m. Registration deadline is noon December 1st. Awards will be presented. To register or for more information, visit www.odessa-tx.gov/242/parade-of-lights or call 432-335-4682. Garden Grants. The Texas Farm Bureau is offering $500 grants to help schools establish or improve gardens or greenhouses. Aquaponic and hydroponic systems are eligible if they are used to teach students about food production. Get the details at http tfb.us/gardengrant21. Apply by noon, October 22nd at http://tfb.us/gardengrantapply21.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.